Lord of the Flies, a novel by William Golding, with a biographical and critical note by E.L. Epstein. Chapter 1. The Sound of the Shell. The boy with fair hair lowered himself down the last few feet of rock and began to pick his way toward the lagoon. Though he had taken off his school sweater and trailed it now from one hand, his gray shirt stuck to him and his hair was plastered to his forehead. All round him, the long scars smashed into the jungle was a bath of heat. He was clambering heavily among the creepers and broken trunks when a bird, a vision of red and yellow, flashed upwards with a witch-like cry. And this cry was echoed by another. "Hi," it said. "Wait a minute." The undergrowth at the side of the scar was shaken, and a multitude of raindrops fell pattering. "Wait a minute," the voice said. "I got caught up." The fair boy stopped and jerked his stockings with an automatic gesture that made the jungle seem for a moment like the home counties. The voice spoke again. "I can't hardly move with all these creeper things." The owner of the voice came backing out of the undergrowth, so that twigs scratched on a greasy windbreaker. The naked crooks of his knees were plump, caught and scratched by thorns. He bent down, removed the thorns carefully, and turned around. He was shorter than the fair boy and very fat. He came forward, searching out safe lodgments for his feet, and then looked up through thick spectacles. "Where's the man with the megaphone?" The fair boy shook his head. "This is an island. At least I think it's an island. That's a reef out in the sea. Perhaps there aren't any grown-ups anywhere." The fat boy looked startled. "There was that pilot. He wasn't in the passenger cabin. He was up in front." The fair boy was peering at the reef through screwed-up eyes. "All them other kids," the fat boy went on. "Some of them must have got out. They must have, mustn't they?" The fair boy began to pick his way as casually as possible toward the water. He tried to be offhand and not too obviously uninterested, but the fat boy hurried after him. "Aren't there any grown-ups at all?" "I don't think so," the fair boy said this solemnly. But then the delight of a realized ambition overcame him. In the middle of the scar, he stood on his head and grinned at the reversed fat boy. "No grown-ups!" The fat boy thought for a moment. "That pilot." The fair boy allowed his feet to come down and sat on the steamy earth. "He must have flown off after he dropped us. He couldn't land here, not in a place with wheels." "We was attacked!" "We'll be back all right." The fat boy shook his head. "When we was coming down, I looked through one of them windows. I saw the other part of the plane. There were flames coming out of it." He looked up and down in the scar. "And this is what the cabin done." And the boy reached out and touched the jagged end of a trunk. For a moment, he looked interested. "What happened to it?" he asked. "Where's it got to now?" "That storm dragged it out to sea. It wasn't half dangerous when all them tree trunks fallen. There must have been some kids still in it." He hesitated for a moment, then spoke again. "What's your name?"
"Ralph."
The fat boy waited to be asked his name in turn, but this proffer of acquaintance was not made. The fair boy called Ralph smiled vaguely, stood up, and began to make his way once more toward the lagoon. The fat boy hung steadily at his shoulder. "I expect there's a lot more of us scattered about. You haven't seen any others, have you?" Ralph shook his head and increased his speed. Then he tripped over a branch and came down with a crash. The fat boy stood by him, breathing hard. "My auntie told me not to run," he explained, "on account of my asthma."
"Asthmar?"
"That's right. Can't catch my breath. I was the only boy in our school what had asthma," said the fat boy with a touch of pride. "And I've been wearing specs since I was 3. He took off his glasses and held them out to Ralph, blinking and smiling, and then started to wipe them up against his grubby windbreaker. An expression of pain and inward concentration altered the pale contours of his face. He smeared the sweat from his cheeks and quickly adjusted the spectacles on his nose. "Them fruit." He glanced round the scar. "Them fruit," he said.
"I expect."
He put on his glasses, waded away from Ralph, and crouched down among the tangled foliage. "I'll be out again in just a minute." Ralph disentangled himself cautiously and stole away through the branches. In a few seconds, the fat boy's grunts were behind him, and he was hurrying toward the screen that still lay between him and the lagoon. He climbed over a broken trunk and was out of the jungle. The shore was fledged with palm trees. These stood or leaned or reclined against the light, and their green feathers were 100 feet up in the air. The ground beneath them was a bank covered with a coarse grass. torn everywhere by the upheavals of fallen trees, scattered with decaying coconuts and palm saplings. Behind this was the darkness of the forest proper and the open space of the scar. Ralph stood, one hand against a tree trunk, and screwed up his eyes against the shimmering water. Out there, perhaps a mile away, the white surf flinked on a coral reef, and beyond that, the ocean, open ocean was dark blue. Within the irregular arc of coral, the lagoon was still as mountain-like, blue of all shades and shadowy green and purple. The beach between the palm terrace and the water was a thin stick, endless apparently, for to Ralph's left, the perspectives of palm and beach and water drew to a point at infinity, and always, almost visible, was the heat. He jumped down from the terrace. The sand was thick over his black shoes, and the heat hit him. He became conscious of the weight of his clothes, kicked his shoes off fiercely, and ripped off each stocking with its elastic garter in a single movement. Then he leapt back on the terrace, pulled off his shirt, and stood there among the skull-like coconuts with green shadows from the palms and the forest sliding over his skin. He undid the snake clasp of his belt, lugged off his shorts and pants, and stood there naked, looking at the dazzling beach in the water. He was old enough, 12 years and a few months, to have lost the prominent tummy of childhood, and not yet old enough for adolescence to have made him awkward. You could see now that he might make a boxer, as far as width and heaviness of shoulders went, but there was a mildness about his mouth and eyes that proclaimed no devil. He patted the palm trunk softly, and forced at last to believe in the reality of the island, laughed delightedly again, and stood on his head. He turned neatly on to his feet, jumped down to the beach, knelt, and swept a double armful of sand into a pile against his chest. Then he sat back and looked at the water with bright, excited eyes. Ralph! The fat boy lowered himself over the terrace and sat down carefully, using the edge as a seat. I'm sorry I've been such a time. Them fruit! He wiped his glasses and adjusted them on his button nose. The frame made a deep, pink V on the bridge. He looked critically at Ralph's golden body, and then down at his own clothes. He laid a hand on the end of a zipper that extended down his chest. My auntie... Then he opened the zipper with decision and pulled the whole windbreaker over his head. There! Ralph looked at him sidelong and said nothing. I expect we'll want to know all their names, said the fat boy, and make a list. We ought to have a meeting. Ralph did not take the hint, so the fat boy was forced to continue. I don't care what they call me, he said confidentially, so long as they don't call me what they used to call me at school. Ralph was faintly interested. What was that? The fat boy glanced over his shoulder, then leaned toward Ralph. He whispered, They used to call me Piggy. Ralph shrieked with laughter. He jumped up. Piggy! Piggy! Ralph, please! Piggy clasped his hands in apprehension. I said I didn't want... Piggy! Piggy! Ralph danced out into the hot air of the beach and then returned as a fighter plane with wings swept back and machine-gunned Piggy. Shoo! He dived in the sand at Piggy's feet and lay there laughing. Piggy! Piggy grinned reluctantly, pleased despite himself at even this much recognition. So long as you don't tell the others. Ralph giggled in the sand. The expression of pain and concentration returned to Piggy's face. Half a sec, he hastened himself back into the forest. Ralph stood up and trotted along to the right. Here the beach was interrupted abruptly by the square motif of the landscape. A great platform of pink granite thrust up uncompromisingly through forest and terraced, and sand and lagoon to make a raised jetty 4 feet high. The top of this was covered with a thin layer of soil and coarse grass and shaded with young palm trees. There was not enough soil for them to grow to any height, and when they reached perhaps 20 feet, they fell and dried, forming a crisscross pattern of trunks, very convenient to sit on. The palms that still stood made a green roof, covered on the underside with a quivering tangle of reflections from the lagoon. Ralph hauled himself onto the platform, noted the coolness and shade, shut one eye, and decided that the shadows on his body were really green. He picked his way to the seaward edge of the platform and stood looking down into the water. It was clear to the bottom and bright with the efflorescence of tropical weed and coral. A school of tiny, glittering fish flicked hither and thither. Ralph spoke to himself, sounding the bass strings of delight. Wizzo! Beyond the platform, there was more enchantment. Some act of God, a typhoon perhaps, or the storm that had accompanied his own arrival, had banked sand inside the lagoon so that there was a long, deep pool in the beach with a high ledge of pink granite at the further end. Ralph had been deceived before, now, by the specious appearance of depth in a beach pool, and he approached this one preparing to be disappointed. But the island ran true to form, and the incredible pool, which clearly was only invaded by the sea at a high tide, was so deep at one end as to be dark green. Ralph inspected the whole 30 yards carefully, and then plunged in. The water was warmer than his blood, and he might have been swimming in a huge bath. Piggy appeared again, sat on the rocky edge, and watched Ralph's green and white body enviously. "You can't half swim." "Piggy?" Piggy took off his shoes and socks, ranged them carefully on the ledge, and tested the water with one toe. "It's hot. What did you expect?" "I didn't expect nothing. My auntie..." "Sucks to your auntie." Ralph did a surface dive and swam underwater with his eyes open. The sandy edge of the pool loomed up like a hillside. He turned over, holding his nose, and a golden light danced and shattered just over his face. Piggy was looking determined and began to take off his shorts. Presently, he was palely and fatly naked. He tiptoed down the sandy side of the pool and sat there up to his neck in water, smiling proudly at Ralph. "Aren't you going to swim?" Piggy shook his head. "I can't swim. I wasn't allowed. My asthma." "Sucks to your asthmar." Piggy bore this with a sort of humble patience. "You can't half swim well." Ralph paddled backwards down the slope, immersed his mouth, and blew a jet of water into the air. Then he lifted his chin and spoke. "I could swim when I was 5. Daddy taught me. He's a commander in the Navy. When he gets leave, he'll come and rescue us. What's your father?" Piggy flushed suddenly. "My dad's dead," he said quickly. "And my mom..." He took off his glasses and looked vainly for something with which to clean them. "I used to live with my auntie. She kept a candy store. I used to get ever so many candies, as many as I liked. When will your dad rescue us?" "Soon as he can." Piggy rose, dripping from the water, and stood naked, cleaning his glasses with a sock. The only sound that reached them now through the heat of the morning was the long, grinding roar of the breakers on the reef. "How does he know we're here?" Ralph lolled in the water. Sleep enveloped him like the swathing mirages that were wrestling with the brilliance of the lagoon. "How does he know we're here?" "Because," thought Ralph, "because. Because." The roar from the reef became very distant. "They tell him at the airport." Piggy shook his head, put on his flashing glasses, and looked down at Ralph. "Not them. Didn't you hear what the pilot said about the atom bomb? They're all dead." Ralph pulled himself out of the water, stood facing Piggy, and considered this unusual problem. Piggy persisted. "This is an island, isn't it?" "I climbed a rock," and said Ralph slowly, "and I think this is an island." "They're all dead," said Piggy. "And this is an island. Nobody don't know we're here. Your dad don't know. Nobody don't know." His lips quivered, and his spectacles were dimmed with mist. "We may stay here till we die." With that word, the heat seemed to increase till it became a threatening weight, and the lagoon attacked them with a blinding effulgence. "Give my clothes," muttered Ralph. "Along there." He trotted through the sand, enduring the sun's enmity, crossing the path, and found his scattered clothes. To put on a gray shirt once more was strangely pleasing. Then he climbed the edge of the platform and sat in the green shade of a convenient trunk. Piggy hauled himself up, carrying most of his clothes under his arms. Then he sat carefully on a fallen trunk near the little cliff that fronted the lagoon, and the tangled reflections quivered over him. Presently, he spoke. "We gotta find the others. We gotta do something." Ralph said nothing. Here was a coral island, protected from the sun. Ignoring Piggy's ill-omened talk, he dreamed pleasantly. Piggy insisted, "How many of us are there?" Ralph came forward and stood by Piggy. "I don't know." Here and there, little breezes crept over the polished waters beneath the haze of heat. When these breezes reached the platform, the palm fronds would whisper, so that spots of blurred sunlight slid over their bodies, or moved like bright, winged things in the shade. Piggy looked up at Ralph. All the shadows on Ralph's face were reversed. Green above, bright below from the lagoon. A blur of sunlight was crawling across his hair. We gotta do something. Ralph looked through him. Here at last was the imagined but never fully realized place leaping into real life. Ralph's lips parted in a delighted smile, and Piggy, taking this smile to himself as a mark of recognition, laughed with pleasure. If this really is an island, what's that? Ralph had stopped smiling and was pointing into the lagoon. Something creamy lay among the ferny weeds. A stone? No, a shell! Suddenly, Piggy was abubble, with decorous excitement. Sright, it's a shell! I seen one like that before, on someone's back wall. A conch, he called it. He used to blow it, and then his mom would come. It's ever so valuable. Near to Ralph's elbow, a palm sapling leaned out over the lagoon. Indeed, the weight was already pulling a lump from the poor soil, and soon it would fall. He tore out the stem and began to poke about in the water, while the brilliant fish flicked away on this side and that. Piggy leaned dangerously. Careful, you'll break it. Shut up. Ralph spoke absently. The shell was interesting, and pretty, and a worthy plaything. But the vivid phantoms of his daydream still interposed between him and Piggy, who in this context was an irrelevance. The palm sapling, bending, pushed the shell across the weeds. Ralph used one hand as a fulcrum and pressed down with the other till the shell rose, dripping, and Piggy could make a grab. Now the shell was no longer a thing seen, but not to be touched. Ralph, too, became excited. Piggy babbled, "A conch, ever so expensive. I bet if you wanted to buy one, you'd have to pay pounds and pounds and pounds. He had it on his garden wall, and my auntie?" Ralph took the shell from Piggy, and a little water ran down his arm. In color, the shell was deep cream, touched here and there with fading pink. Between the point, worn away into a little hole, and the pink lips of the mouth, lay 18 inches of shell, with a slight spiral twist, and covered with a delicate, embossed pattern. Ralph shook sand out of the deep tube. "Mooed like a cow," he said. "He had some white stones, too, and a birdcage with a green parrot. He didn't blow the white stones, of course, and he said..." Piggy paused for breath and stroked the glistening thing that lay in Ralph's hands. "Ralph!" Ralph looked up. "We can use this to call the others. Have a meeting. They'll come when they hear us." He beamed at Ralph. "That was what you meant, didn't you? That's why you got the conch out of the water." Ralph pushed back his fair hair. "How did your friend blow the conch?" "He kind of spat," said Piggy. "My auntie wouldn't let me blow on account of my asthma. He said you blow from down here." Piggy laid a hand on his jutting abdomen. "You try, Ralph. You'll call the others." Doubtfully, Ralph laid the small end of the shell against his mouth and blew. There came a rushing sound from its mouth, but nothing more. Ralph wiped the salt water off his lips and tried again, but the shell remained silent. "He kind of spat." Ralph pursed his lips and squirted air into the shell, which emitted a low, farting noise. This amused both boys so much that Ralph went on squirting for some minutes between bouts of laughter. "He blew from down there." Ralph grasped the idea and hit the shell with air from his diaphragm. Immediately, the thing sounded. A deep, harsh note boomed under the palms, spread through the intricacies of the forest, and echoed back from the pink granite of the mountain. Clouds of birds rose from the treetops, and something squealed and ran in the undergrowth. Ralph took the shell away from his lips. "Gosh!" His ordinary voice sounded like a whisper after the harsh note of the conch. He laid the conch against his lips, took a deep breath, and blew once more. The note boomed again, and then at his firmer pressure, the note, flucking up an octave, became a strident blare more penetrating than before. Piggy was shouting something, his face pleased, his glasses flashing. The birds cried, small animals scuttered. Ralph's breath failed, the note dropped an octave, became a low wubber, was a rush of air. The conch was silent, a gleaming tusk. Ralph's face was dark with breathlessness, and the air over the island was full of bird clamor and echoes ringing. "I bet you can hear that for miles." Ralph found his breath and blew a series of short blasts. Piggy exclaimed, "There's one!" A child had appeared among the palms, about 100 yards along the beach. He was a boy perhaps 6 years. Sturdy and fair, his clothes torn, his face covered with a sticky mess of fruit. His trousers had been lowered for an obvious purpose, and had only been pulled back halfway. He jumped off the palm terrace into the sand, and his trousers fell about his ankles. He stepped out of them and trotted to the platform. Piggy helped him up. Meanwhile, Ralph continued to blow, till voices shouted in the forest. The small boy squatted in front of Ralph, looking up brightly and vertically. As he received the reassurance of something purposeful being done, he began to look satisfied. And his only clean digit, a pink thumb, slid into his mouth. Piggy leaned down to him. "What's your name?"
"Johnny."
Piggy muttered the name to himself, and then shouted to Ralph, who was not interested because he was still blowing. His face was dark with the violent pleasure of making this stupendous noise, and his heart was making the stretched shirt shake. The shouting in the forest was nearer. Signs of life were visible now on the beach. The sand trembling beneath the heat haze concealed many figures in its miles of length. Boys were making their way toward the platform through the hot, dumb sand. 3 small children, no older than Johnny, appeared from startlingly close at hand, where they had been gorging fruit in the forest. A dark little boy, not much younger than Piggy, parted a tangle of the undergrowth, walked onto the platform, and smiled cheerfully at everybody. More and more of them came. Taking their cue from the innocent Johnny, they sat down on the fallen palm trunks and waited. Ralph continued to blow short, penetrating blasts. Piggy moved among the crowd, asking names and frowning to remember them. The children gave him the same simple obedience that they had given to the men with megaphones. Some were naked and carrying their clothes, others half-naked, or more or less dressed, in school uniforms, gray-blue, fawn, jacketed, or jerseyed. There were badges, mottos even, stripes of color in stockings and pullovers, their heads flustered back against their trunks in the green shade, heads brown, fair, black, chestnut, sandy, mouse-colored, heads muttering, whispering, heads full of eyes that watched Ralph and speculated. Something was being done. The children who came along the beach, singly or in twos, leapt into visibility when they crossed the line from heat haze to nearer sand. Here, the eye was first attracted to a black, bat-like creature that danced on the sand, and only later perceived the body above it. The bat was the child's shadow, shrunk by the vertical sun to a patch between the hurrying feet. Even while he blew, Ralph noticed the last pair of bodies that reached the platform above, a fluttering patch of black. The 2 boys, bullet-headed and with hair like tow, flung themselves down and lay grinning and panting at Ralph like dogs. They were twins, and the eye was shocked and incredulous at such cheery duplication. They breathed together. They grinned together. They were chunky and vital. They raised wet lips at Ralph, for they seemed provided with not quite enough skin, so that their profiles were blurred and their mouths pulled open. Piggy bent his flashing glasses to them and could be heard between the blasts repeating their names. "Sam, Eric, Sam, Eric." Then he got muddled. The twins shook their heads and pointed at each other, and the crowd laughed. At last, Ralph ceased to blow and sat there, the conch trailing from one hand, his head bowed on his knees. As the echoes died away, so did the laughter, and there was silence. Within the diamond haze of the beach, something dark was fumbling along. Ralph saw it first, and watched till the intentness of his gaze drew all eyes that way. Then the creature stepped from mirage onto clear sand, and they saw that the darkness was not all shadow, but mostly clothing. The creature was a party of boys, marching approximately in step, in 2 parallel lines and dressed in strangely eccentric clothing. Shorts, shirts, and different garments they carried in their hands, but each boy wore a square black cap with a silver badge on it. Their bodies, from throat to ankle, were hidden by black cloaks, which bore a long silver cross on the left breast, and each neck was finished off with a ham-bone frill. The heat of the tropics, the descent, the search for food, and now this sweaty march along the blazing beach had given them the complexions of newly washed plums. The boy who controlled them was dressed in the same way, though his cap badge was golden. When his party was about 10 years from the platform, he shouted an order, and they halted, gasping, sweating and swaying in the fierce light. The boy himself came forward, vaulted onto the platform with his cloak flying, and peered into what to him was almost complete darkness. "Where's the man with the trumpet?" Ralph, sensing his son's blindness, answered him. "There's no man with a trumpet, only me." The boy came close and peered down at Ralph, screwing up his face as he did so. What he saw of the fair-haired boy with the creamy shell on his knees did not seem to satisfy him. He turned quickly, his black cloak circling. "Isn't there a ship, then?" Inside the floating cloak, he was tall, thin, and bony, and his hair was red beneath his black cap. His face was crumpled and freckled, and ugly without silliness. Out of this face stared two light blue eyes, frustrated now, and turning, or ready to turn, to anger. "Isn't there a man here?" Ralph spoke to his back. "No, we're having a meeting. Come and join in." The group of cloaked boys began to scatter from close line. The tall boy shouted at them, "Choir, stand still!" Wearily obedient, the choir huddled into line and stood there swaying in the sun. Nonetheless, some began to protest faintly. "But Meridu, please Meridu, can't we?" Then one of these boys flipped on his face in the sand and the line broke up. They heaved the fallen boy to the platform and let him lie. Meridu, his eyes staring, made the best of a bad job. "All right then, sit down, let him alone." "But Meridu, he's always throwing a feint," said Meridu. "He did in Gib and Adis and at Matins over the precentor." This last piece of shop brought sniggers from the choir, who perched like black birds on the crisscross trunks and examined Ralph with interest. Piggy asked no names. He was intimidated by this uninformed superiority and the offhand authority in Meridu's voice. He shrank to the other side of Ralph and busied himself with his glass. Meridu turned to Ralph. "Aren't there any grown-ups?" "No." Meridu sat down on a trunk and looked around the circle. "Then we'll have to look after ourselves." Secure on the other side of Ralph, Piggy spoke timidly. "That's why Ralph made a meeting. So as we can decide what to do. We've heard names. That's Johnny. Those two, they're twins. Sam and Eric." "Which is Eric? You? No, you're Sam." "I'm Sam. And I'm Eric." "We better all have names," said Ralph. "So I'm Ralph." We got most names," said Piggy. "Got 'em just now." "Kids' name," said Meridu. "Why should I be Jack? I'm Meridu." Ralph turned to him quickly. This was the voice of one who knew his own mind. "Then," went on Piggy, "that boy I forget." "You're talking too much," said Meridu. "Shut up, Fatty." Laughter arose. "He's not Fatty," cried Ralph. "His real name's Piggy." "Piggy, Piggy, oh, Piggy." A storm of laughter arose, and even the tiniest child joined in. For the moment, the boys were a closed circuit of sympathy with Piggy outside. He went very pink, bowed his head, and cleaned his glasses again. Finally, the laughter died away, and the naming continued. There was Morris, next in size among the choir boys to Jack, but broad and grinning all the time. There was a slight, furtive boy whom no one knew, who kept to himself with an inner intensity of avoidance and secrecy. He muttered that his name was Roger and was silent again. Bill, Robert, Harold, Henry. The choir boy who had fainted sat up against a palm trunk, smiled pallidly at Ralph, and said that his name was Simon. Jack spoke. "We've got to decide about being rescued." There was a buzz. One of the smallest boys, Henry, said he wanted to go home. "Shut up," said Ralph absently. He lifted the conch. "Seems to me we ought to have a chief to decide things." "A chief! A chief!" "I ought to be chief," said Jack with simple arrogance, "because I'm chapter chorister and head boy. I can sing C-sharp." Another buzz. "Well then," said Jack, "I..." He hesitated. The dark boy Roger stirred at last and spoke up. "Let's have a vote." "Yes, vote for chief. Let's vote." This toy of voting was almost as pleasing as the conch. Jack started to protest, but the clamor changed from the general wish for a chief to an election by acclaim of Ralph himself. None of the boys could have found good reason for this. What intelligence had been shown was traceable to Piggy, while the most obvious leader was Jack. But there was a stillness about Ralph as he sat that marked him out. There was his size and attractive appearance. And most obscurely, yet most powerfully, there was the conch. The being that had blown that had sat waiting for them on the platform, with the delicate thing balanced on his knees, was set apart.
Him with the shell! Ralph! Ralph! Let him be chief with the trumpet thing!
Ralph raised a hand for silence. All right. Who wants Jack for chief? With dreary obedience, the choir raised their hands. Who wants me? Every hand outside the choir, except Piggy's, was raised immediately. Then Piggy, too, raised his hand grudgingly into the air. Ralph counted. I'm chief, then. The circle of boys broke into applause. Even the choir applauded, and the freckles on Jack's face disappeared under a blush of mortification. He started up, then changed his mind and sat down again while the air rang. Ralph looked at him, eager to offer something. The choir belongs to you, of course. They could be the army. Or hunters. They could be... The suffusion drained away from Jack's face. Ralph waved again for silence. Jack's in charge of the choir. They can be... What do you want them to be? Hunters. Jack and Ralph smiled at each other with shy liking. The rest began to talk eagerly. Jack stood up. All right, choir. Take off your togs. As if released from class, the choir boys stood up, chattered, piled their black cloaks on the grass. Jack laid his on the trunk by Ralph. His gray shorts were sticking to him with sweat. Ralph glanced at them admiringly. And when Jack saw his glance, he explained, I tried to get over that hill to see if there was water all around, but your shell called us. Ralph smiled and held up the conch for silence. Listen, everybody. I've got to have time to think things out. I can't decide what to do straight off. If this isn't an island, we might be rescued straight away. So we've got to decide if this is an island. Everybody must stay around here and wait, and not go away. Three of us, if we take more, we'd all get mixed up and lose each other. So three of us will go on an expedition and find out. I'll go, and Jack, and... He looked around the circle of eager faces. There was no lack of boys to choose from. And Simon. The boys round Simon giggled, and he stood up, laughing a little. Now that the pallor of his faint was over, he was a skinny, vivid little boy, with a glance coming up from under a hut of straight hair that hung down, black and coarse. He nodded at Ralph. I'll come. And I, Jack snatched from behind him a sizable sheath knife, and clouded it into a trunk. The buzz rose and died away. Piggy stirred. I'll come. Ralph turned to him. You're no good on a job like this. All the same. We don't want you, said Jack flatly. There's enough. Piggy's glasses flashed. I was with him when he found the conch. I was with him before anyone else was. Jack and the others paid no attention. There was a general dispersal. Ralph, Jack, and Simon jumped off the platform and walked along the sand past the bathing pool. Piggy hung bumbling behind them. If Simon walks in the middle of us, said Ralph, then we could talk over his head. The three of them fell into step. This meant that every now and then, Simon had to do a double shuffle to catch up with the others. Presently, Ralph stopped and turned back to Piggy. Look! Jack and Simon pretended to notice nothing. They walked on. You can't come. Piggy's glasses were misted again, this time with humiliation. You told him after what I said? His face flushed, his mouth trembled. After I said I didn't want... What on earth are you talking about? About being called Piggy. I said I didn't care as long as they didn't call me Piggy. And I said not to tell them. And then you went and said it straight out. Stillness descended on them. Ralph looked more with understanding at Piggy, saw that he was hurt and crushed. He hovered between the two courses of apology or further insult. Better Piggy than Fatty, he said at last, with the directness of genuine leadership. And anyway, I'm sorry if you feel like that. Now go back, Piggy, and take names. That's your job. So long. He turned and raced after the other two. Piggy stood, and the rose of indignation faded slowly from his cheeks. He went back to the platform. The three boys walked briskly on the sand. The tide was low, and there was a strip of weed-strewn beach that was almost as firm as a road. A kind of glamour was spread over them, and the scene, and they were conscious of the glamour and made happy by it. They turned to each other, laughing excitedly, talking, not listening. The air was bright. Ralph, faced by the task of translating all this into an explanation, stood on his head over and over. When they had done laughing, Simon stroked Ralph's arm shyly, and they had to laugh again. "Come on," said Jack presently. "We're explorers."
"We'll go to the end of the island," said Ralph, "and look around the corner. If it is an island."
Now, toward the end of the afternoon, the mirages were settling a little. They found the end of the island, quite distinct, and not magicked out of shape or sense. There was a jumble of the usual squareness, with one great block sitting into the lagoon. Seabirds were nesting there.
"Like icing," said Ralph, "on a pink cake."
"We shan't see round this corner," said Jack, "because there isn't one. Only a slow curve. And you can see, the rocks get worse."
Ralph shaded his eyes and followed the jagged outline of the crags up toward the mountain. This part of the beach was nearer the mountain than any other they had seen before.
"We'll try climbing the mountain from here," he said. "I should think this is the easiest way. There's less of that jungly stuff and more pink rock. Come on." The three boys began to scramble up. Some unknown force had wrenched and shattered these cubes so that they lay askew, often piled diminishingly on each other. The most usual feature of the rock was a pink cliff surmounted by a skewed block, and that again surmounted, and that again, till the pinkness began to a stack of balanced rock projecting through the looped fantasy of the forest creepers. While the pink lifts rose out of the ground, there were often narrow tracks winding upwards. They could edge along them, deep in the plant world, their faces to the rock.
"What made this track?"
Jack paused, wiping the sweat from his face. Ralph stood by him, breathless.
"Men?"
Jack shook his head.
"Animals?"
Ralph peered into the darkness under the trees. The forest minutely vibrated.
"Come on."
The difficulty was not the steep ascent round the shoulders of rock, but the occasional plunges through the undergrowth to get to the next path. Here the roots and stems of creepers were in such tangles that the boys had to thread them through them like pliant needles. Their only guide, apart from the brown ground and occasional flashes of light through the foliage, was the tendency of slope. Whether this hole, laced as it was with the cables of creeper, stood higher than that. Somehow, they moved up. Immured in these tangles, at perhaps their most difficult moment, Ralph turned with shining eyes to the others.
"Wacko? Wizard?
Smashing!" The cause of their pleasure was not obvious. All three were hot, dirty, and exhausted. Ralph was badly scratched. The creepers were as thick as their thighs and left little but tunnels for further penetration. Ralph shouted experimentally, and they listened to the muted echoes.
"This is real exploring," said Jack. "I bet nobody's been here before."
"We ought to draw a map," said Ralph, "only we haven't any paper."
"We can make scratches on bark," said Simon, "and rub black stuff in."
Again came the solemn communion of shining eyes in the gloom.
"Wacko, wizard."
There was no place for standing on one's head. This time, Ralph expressed the intensity of his emotion by pretending to knock Simon down, and soon they were a happy heaving pile in the underdusk. When they had fallen apart, Ralph spoke first.
"Got to get on."
The pink granite of the next cliff was further back from the creepers and trees, so they could trot up the path. This again led into more open forest, so they had a glimpse of the spread sea. With openness came the sun. It dried the sweat that had soaked their clothes in the dark, damp heat. At last, the way to the top looked like a scramble over pink rock, with no more plunging through darkness. The boys chose their way through defiles and over heaps of sharp stone.
"Look! Look!"
High over this end of the island, the shattered rocks lifted up their stacks and chimneys. This one, against which Jack leaned, moved with a grating sound when they pushed.
"Come on!"
But not, "Come on, to the top." The assault on the summit must wait while the three boys accepted this challenge. The rock was as large as a small motor car.
"Heave!"
Sway back and forth, catch the rhythm. "Heave!" Increasing the swing of the pendulum. Increase, increase, come up and bear against that point of furthest balance. Increase, increase, heave! The great rock loitered, poised on one toe. Decided not to return. Moved through the air. Fell.
struck, turned over, leapt, droning through the air, and smashed a deep hole in the canopy of the forest. Echoes and birds flew. White and pink dust floated. The forest further down shook as with the passage of an enraged monster. And then the island was still.
Wacko, like a bomb! Wee-ah-oo!
Not for 5 minutes could they drag themselves away from this triumph. But they left at last. The way to the top was easy after that. As they reached the last stretch, Ralph stopped.
Golly!
They were on the lip of a circular hollow in the side of the mountain. This was filled with a blue flower, a rock plant of some sort, and the overflow hung down the vent and spilled lavishly among the canopy of the forest. The air was thick with butterflies, lifting, fluttering, and settling. Beyond the hollow was a square top of mountain, and soon they were standing on it. They had guessed before that this was an island, clambering among the pink rocks, with the sea on either side, and the crystal heights of air they had known by some instinct that the sea lay on every side. But there seemed something more fitting in leaving the last word till they stood on the top and could see a circular horizon of water. Ralph turned to the others. "This belongs to us." It was roughly boat-shaped, humped near this end with, behind them, the jumbled descent to the shore. On either side, rocks, cliffs, treetops, and a steep slope. Forward there, the length of the boat, a tamer descent, tree-clad with hints of pink, and then the jungly flat of the ocean, of the island, dense green, but drawn at the end to a pink tail. There, where the island petered out in water, was another island, a rock almost detached, standing like a fort, facing them across the green with one bold, pink bastion. The boys surveyed all this, then looked out to sea. They were high up, and the afternoon had advanced. The view was not robbed of sharpness by mirage. "That's a reef, a coral reef. I've seen pictures like that." The reef enclosed more than one side of the island, lying perhaps a mile out and parallel to what they now thought of as their beach. The coral was scribbled in the sea as though a giant had bent down to reproduce the shape of the island in a flowing chalk line, but tired before he had finished. Inside was peacock water, rocks and weeds showing as in an aquarium. Outside was the dark blue of the sea. The tide was running so that long streaks of foam tailed away from the reef, and for a moment they felt that the boat was moving steadily astern. Jack pointed down. "That's where we landed." Beyond falls and cliffs, there was a gash visible in the trees. There were the splintered trunks, and then the drag, leaving only a fringe of palm between the scar and the sea. There, too, jutting into the lagoon, was the platform, with insect-like figures moving near it. Ralph sketched a twining line from the bald spot on which they had stood, down a slope. A gully, through flowers, round and down to the rock where the scar started. "That's the quickest way back." Eyes shining, mouths open, triumphant, they savored the rite of domination. They were lifted up, were friends. "There's no village smoke and no boat," said Ralph, wisely. "We'll make sure later, but I think it's uninhabited." "We'll get food," cried Jack. "Hunt, catch things until they fetch us." Simon looked at them both, saying nothing but nodding till his black hair flopped backwards and forwards. His face was glowing. Ralph looked down the other way, where there was no reef. "Steeper," said Jack. Ralph made a cupping gesture. "That bit of forest down there, the mountain holds it up." Every point of the mountain held up trees, flowers and trees. Now the forest stirred, roared and flailed. The near acres of rock, flowers, fluttered, and for a half minute the breeze blew cool on their faces. Ralph spread his arms. "All ours." They laughed and tumbled and shouted on the mountain. "I'm hungry." When Simon mentioned his hunger, the others became aware of theirs. "Come on," said Ralph. "We found out what we wanted to know." They scrambled down a rock slope, dropped among flowers, and made their way under the trees. Here they paused and examined the bushes around them curiously. Simon spoke first. "Like candles. Candle bushes. Candle buds." The bushes were dark evergreen and aromatic, and the many buds were waxen green and folded up against the light. Jack slashed at one with his knife, and the scent spilled over them. "Candle buds." "You couldn't light them," said Ralph. "They just look like candles." "Green candles," said Jack contemptuously. "We can't eat them. Come on." They were in the beginnings of the thick forest, plonking with weary feet on a track, when they heard the noises, squeakings, and the hard strike of hooves on the path. As they pushed forward, the squeaking increased, till it became a frenzy. They found a piglet caught in a curtain of creepers, throwing itself at the elastic trees, traces, in all the madness of extreme terror. Its voice was thin, needle-sharp and insistent. The three boys rushed forward, and Jack drew his knife again with a flourish. He raised his arm in the air. There came a pause, a hiatus. The pig continued to scream and the creepers to jerk, and the blade continued to flash at the end of a bony arm. The pause was only long enough for them to understand what an enormity the downward stroke would be. Then the piglet tore loose from the creepers and scurried into the undergrowth. They were left looking at each other in the place of terror. Jack's face was white under the freckles. He noticed that he still held the knife aloft, and brought his arm down, replacing the blade in the sheath. Then they all three laughed ashamedly, and began to climb back to the track. "I was choosing a place," said Jack. "I was just waiting for a moment to decide where to stab him." "You should stick a pig," said Ralph fiercely. "They always talk about sticking a pig." "You cut a pig's throat to let the blood out," said Jack. "Otherwise you can't eat the meat." "Why didn't you?" They knew very well why he hadn't. Because of the enormity of the knife descending and cutting into living flesh. Because of the unbearable blood. "I was going to," said Jack. He was ahead of them, and they could not see his face. "I was choosing a place. Next time!" He snatched his knife out of the sheath and slammed it into a tree trunk. Next time there would be no mercy. He looked around fiercely, daring them to contradict. Then they broke out into the sunlight, and for a while, they were busy finding and devouring food as they moved down the scar toward the platform and the meeting. Chapter 2. Fire on the Mountain. By the time Ralph finished blowing the conch, the platform was crowded. There were differences between the meeting and the one held in the morning. The afternoon sun slanted in from the other side of the platform, and most of the children, feeling too late the smart of sunburn, had put their clothes on. The choir, noticeably less of group, had discarded their cloaks. Ralph sat on a fallen trunk, his left side to the sun. On his right were most of the choir. On his left, the larger boys who had not known each other before the evacuation. Before him, small children squatted in the grass. "Silence now." Ralph lifted the cream and pink shell to his knees, and a sudden breeze scattered light over the platform. He was uncertain whether to stand up or remain sitting. He looked sideways to his left, toward the bathing pool. Piggy was sitting near, but giving no help. Ralph cleared his throat. "Well, then." All at once he found he could talk fluently and explain what he had to say. He passed a hand through his fair hair and spoke. "We're on an island. We've been on the mountain top and seen water all around. We saw no houses, no smoke, no footprints, no boats, no people. We're on an uninhabited island with no other people on it." Jack broke in. "All the same, you need an army for hunting. Hunting pigs." "Yes, there are pigs on the island." All three of them tried to convey the sense of the pink live thing struggling in the creepers. "We saw, squealing, it broke away, before I could kill it, but next time..." Jack slammed his knife into a trunk and looked around challengingly. The meeting settled down again. "So you see," said Ralph, "we need hunters to get us meat. And another thing." He lifted the shell on his knees and looked around the sun-slashed faces. "There aren't any grown-ups. We shall have to look after ourselves." The meeting hummed and was silent. "And another thing. We can't have everybody talking at once. We'll have to have hands up, like at school." He held the conch before his face and glanced around the mouth. "Then I'll give him the conch." "Conch?" "That's what the shell's called. I'll give the conch to the next person to speak. He can hold it when he's speaking. But, look, and he won't be interrupted, except by me." Jack was on his feet. "We'll have rules," he cried excitedly. "Lots of rules. Then, when anyone breaks them, wee-o, wako, bong, boink." Ralph lifted the conch from his lap. Then Piggy was standing cradling the great cream shell, and the shouting died down. Jack, left on his feet, looked uncertainly at Ralph, who smiled and patted the log. Jack sat down.
Piggy took off his glasses and blinked at the assembly while he wiped them on his shirt.
You're hindering Ralph. You're not letting him to the most important thing.
He paused effectively.
Who knows we're here, eh?
They knew at the airport. The man with the trumpet thing.
My dad?
Piggy put on his glasses.
Nobody knows we're here,
said Piggy. He was paler than before and breathless.
Perhaps they knew where we were going to, and perhaps not. But they don't know where we are, because we never got there.
He gaped at them for a moment, then swayed and sat down. Ralph took the conch from his hands.
That's what I was going to say, he went on. When you all...
He gazed at their intent faces.
The plane was shot down in flames. Nobody knows where we are. We may be here a long time.
The silence was so complete that they could hear the unevenness of Piggy's breathing. The sun slanted in and lay golden over half the platform. The breezes that on the lagoon had chased their tails like kittens were finding their way across the platform and into the forest. Ralph pushed back the tangle of fair hair that hung on his forehead.
So we may be here a long time.
Nobody said anything.
He grinned suddenly.
But this is a good island. We, Jack Simon and me, we climbed the mountain. It's wizard. There's food and drink. And rocks, blue flowers.
Piggy, partly recovered, pointed to the conch in Ralph's hands, and Jack and Simon fell silent.
Ralph went on. While we're waiting, we can have a good time on this island. He gesticulated widely.
It's like in a book.
At once there was a clamor.
Treasure Island. Swallows and Amazons.
Coral Island.
Ralph waved the conch.
This is our island. It's a good island. Until the grown-ups come to fetch us, we'll have fun.
Jack held out his hand for the conch.
There's pigs, he said. There's food and bathing. Water in that little stream along there. And everything. Didn't anyone find anything else?
He handed the conch back to Ralph and sat down.
Apparently, no one had found anything.
The older boys first noticed the child when he resisted. There was a group of little boys urging him forward, and he did not want to go. He was a shrimp of a boy and 6 years old, and one side of his face was blotted out by a mulberry-colored birthmark. He stood now, warped out of the perpendicular by the fierce light of publicity, and he bored into the coarse grass with one toe. He was muttering and about to cry.
The other little boys, whispering but serious, pushed him toward Ralph.
All right, said Ralph. Come on, then.
The small boy looked around in panic.
Speak up!
The small boy held out his hands for the conch, and the assembly shouted with laughter. At once he snatched back his hands and started to cry.
Let him have the conch, shouted Piggy. Let him have it!
At last, Ralph induced him to hold the shell, but by then the blow of laughter had taken away the child's voice. Piggy knelt by him, one hand on the great shell, listening and interpreting to the assembly.
He wants to know what you're going to do about the snake thing.
Ralph laughed, and the other boys laughed with him. The small boy twisted further into himself.
Tell us about the snake thing.
Now he says it was a beastie.
Beastie?
A snake thing, ever so big. He saw it.
Where?
In the woods. Whether the wandering breezes or perhaps the decline of the sun allowed a little coolness to lie under the trees. The boys felt it and stirred restlessly.
You couldn't have a beastie, a snake thing, on an island this size, Ralph explained kindly.
You only get them in big countries, like Africa or India.
Murmur and the grave nodding of heads.
He says the beastie came in the dark.
Then he couldn't see it.
Laughter and cheers.
Did you hear that?
Says he saw the thing in the dark.
He still says he saw the beastie. It came and went away and came back and wanted to eat him.
He was dreaming.
Laughing, Ralph looked for confrontation round the ring of faces. The older boys agreed, and here and there among the little ones was the doubt that required more than rational assurance.
He must have had a nightmare, stumbling him out among those creepers.
More grave nodding. They knew about nightmares.
He says he saw the beastie, the snake thing, and will it come back tonight?
But there isn't a beastie.
He says in the morning it turned into them things like ropes in the trees and hung in the branches.
He says, will it come back tonight?
But there isn't a beastie. There was no laughter at all now, and more grave watching. Ralph pushed both hands through the air, his hair, and looked as the little boy in amusement and exasperation. Jack seized the conch. Ralph's right, of course. There isn't a snake thing. But if there was a snake, we'd hunt it and kill it. We're going to hunt pigs to get meat for everybody, and we'll look for the snake too. But there isn't a snake. We'll make sure when we go hunting. Ralph was annoyed, and for the moment defeated. He felt himself facing something ungraspable. The eyes that looked so intently at him were without humor. But there isn't a beast. Something he had not known was there rose in him and compelled him to make the point loudly and again. But I tell you, there isn't a beast. The assembly was silent. Ralph lifted the conch again, and his good humor came back as he thought of what he had to say next. Now we come to the most important thing. I've been thinking. I was thinking while we were climbing the mountain. He flashed a conspiratorial grin at the other two. And on the beach just now. This is what I thought. We want to have fun, and we want to be rescued. The passionate noise of agreement from the assembly hit him like a wave, and he lost his thread. He thought again. We want to be rescued, and of course we shall be rescued. Voices babbled. The simple statement, unbacked by any proof, but the weight of Ralph's new authority, brought light and happiness. He had to wave the conch before he could make them hear him again. My father's in the Navy. He said there aren't any unknown islands left. He says the Queen has a big room full of maps, and all the islands in the world are drawn there. So the Queen's got a picture of this island. Again came the sound of cheerfulness and better heart. And sooner or later, a ship will pull in here. It might even be Daddy's ship. So you see, sooner or later, we shall be rescued. He paused. With the point made, the assembly was lifted towards safety by his words. They liked and now respected him. Spontaneously, they began to clap, and presently the platform was loud with applause. Ralph flushed, looking sideways at Piggy's open admiration, and then the other way to Jack, who was smirking and showing that he too knew how to clap. Ralph waved the conch. Shut up! Wait! Listen! He went on in the silence, borne on his triumph. There's another thing. We can help them find us. If a ship comes near the island, they may not notice us. So we must make smoke on top of the mountain. We must make a fire. A fire! Make a fire! At once, half the boys were on their feet. Jack clambered among them, the conch forgotten. Come on, follow me! The space under the palm trees was full of noise and movement. Ralph was on his feet too, shouting for quiet, but no one heard him. All at once, the crowd swayed toward the island and was gone, following Jack. Even the tiny children went and did their best among the leaves and broken branches. Ralph was left, holding the conch, with no one but Piggy. Piggy's breathing was quite restored. Little kids, he said scornfully, acting like a crowd of kids. Ralph looked at him doubtfully and laid the conch on the tree trunk. I bet it's gone tea time, said Piggy. What do they think they're going to do on that mountain? He caressed the shell respectfully, then stopped and looked up. Ralph, hey, where are you going? Ralph was already clamoring over the first smashed swath of his scar. A long way ahead of him was crashing in laughter. Piggy watched him in disgust, like a crowd of kids. He sighed, bent, and laced up his shoes. The noise of the errant assembly faded up the mountain. Then, when the martyred expression of a parent who has to keep up with the senseless ebullience of his children, he picked up the conch, turned toward the forest, and began to pick his way over the tumbled scar. Below the other side of the mountaintop was a platform of forest. Once more, Ralph found himself making the cupping gesture. Down there, we could get as much wood as we want. Jack nodded and pulled at his underlip. Starting perhaps 100 feet below them on the steeper side of the mountain, the patch might have been designed expressly for fuel. Trees, forced by the damp heat, found too little soil for full growth, fell early and decayed. Creepers cradled them, and new saplings searched a way up. Jack turned to the choir, who stood ready. Their black caps of maintenance were slid over one ear like berets. We'll build a pile. Come on. They found the likeliest path down and began tugging at the dead wood. And the small boys who had reached the top came sliding too, till everyone but Piggy was busy. Most of the wood was so rotten that when they pulled, It broke up into a shower of fragments and wood lice and decay, but some chunks came out in one piece. The twins, Sam and Eric, were the first to get a lively log, but they could do nothing till Ralph, Jack, Simon, Roger, and Morris found room for a handhold. Then they inched toward the grotesque dead thing up the rock and tumbled it over on top. Each party of boys added a quota, less or more, and the pile grew. At the return, Ralph found himself alone on the limb with Jack, and they grinned at each other, sharing this burden. Once more, amid the breeze, the shouting, the slanting sunlight on the high mountain was shed of that glamour, that strange invisible light of friendship, adventure, and content. Almost too heavy, Jack grinned back. Not for the two of us. Together, joined in an effort by the burden, they staggered up the last steep of the mountain. Together they chanted, 1, 2, 3, and crashed the log onto the great pile. Then they stepped back, laughing with triumphant pleasure, so that immediately Ralph had to stand on his head. Below them, boys were still laboring, though some of the small ones had lost interest and were searching for this new forest for fruit. Now the twins, with unsuspected intelligence, came up the mountain with armfuls of dried leaves and dumped them against the pile. One by one, as they sensed that the pile was complete, the boys stopped going back for more and stood, with the pink, shattered top of the mountain around them. Breath came evenly by now, and sweat dried. Ralph and Jack looked at each other while society paused about them. The shameful knowledge grew in them that they did not know how to begin confession. Ralph spoke first, crimson in the face. "Will you?" He cleared his throat and went on. "Will you light the fire?" Now the absurd situation was open. Jack blushed, too. He began to mutter vaguely. "You rub two sticks. You rub." He glanced at Ralph, who blurted out the last confession of incompetence. "Has anyone got matches?" "You make a bow and spin the arrow," said Roger. He rubbed his fingers in mime. "Psst, psst." A little air was moving over the mountain. Piggy came with it, in shorts and shirt, laboring cautiously out of the forest, with the evening sunlight gleaming from his glasses. He held the conch under his arm. Ralph shouted at him, "Piggy, have you got any matches?" The other boys took up the cry till the mountain rang. Piggy shook his head and came to the pile. "My, you've made a big heap, haven't you?" Jack pointed suddenly. "His specks, use them as burning glasses." Piggy was surrounded before he could back away. "Here, let me go!" His voice rang to a shriek of terror as Jack snatched the glasses off his face. "Mind out! Give them back! I can hardly see! You'll break the conch!" Ralph elbowed him to one side and knelt by the pile. "Stand out of the light." There was pushing and pulling and officious cries. Ralph moved the lenses back and forth, this way and that, till a glossy white image of the declining sun lay on a piece of rotten wood. Almost at once, a thin trickle of smoke rose up and made him cough. Jack knelt too and blew gently so that the smoke drifted away, thickening, and a tiny flame appeared. The flame, nearly invisible at first in that bright sunlight, enveloped a small twig, grew, was enriched with color, and reached up to a branch which exploded with a sharp crack. The flame flapped higher and the boys broke into a cheer. "My specs," howled Piggy. "Give me my specs." Ralph stood away from his pile and put the glasses into Piggy's groping hands. His voice subsided to a mutter. "Just blurs, that's all. Hardly see my hand." The boys were dancing. The pile was so rotten and now so tinder dry that whole limbs yielded passionately to the yellow flames that poured upwards and shook a great beard of flame 20 feet in the air. For yards round, the fire, the heat, was like a blow, and the breeze was a river of sparks. Trunks crumbled to white dust. Ralph shouted, "More wood! All of you, get more wood!" Life became a race with the fire, and the boys chattered through the upper forest. To keep a clean flag of flame flying on the mountain was the immediate end, and no one looked further. Even the smallest boys, unless fruit claimed them, brought little pieces of wood and threw them in. The air moved a little faster and became a light wind, so that leeward and westward side were clearly differentiated. On one side, the air was cool, but on the other, the fire thrust out a savage arm of heat that crinkled hair on in the instant. Boys who felt the evening wind on their damp faces paused to enjoy the freshness of it, and then found they were exhausted. They flung themselves down in the shadows that lay among the shattered rocks. The beard of flame diminished quickly, then the pile fell inwards with a soft, cindery sound, and sent a great tree of sparks upwards, and leaned away and drifted downward. The boys lay, panting like dogs. Ralph raised his head off his forearms. That was no good. Roger spat efficiently into the hot dust. What do you mean? There wasn't any smoke, only flame. Piggy had settled himself in a space between two rocks and sat with the conch on his knees. We haven't made a fire, he said. What's any use? We couldn't keep a fire like that going, not if we tried. A fat lot of you tried, said Jack contemptuously. You just sat. We used his specs, said Simon, smearing a black cheek with his forearm. He helped that way. I got the conch, said Piggy indignantly. You let me speak. The conch doesn't count on top of the mountain, said Jack, so shut up. I got the conch in my hand. Put on green branches, said Maurice. That's the best way to make smoke. I got the conch. Jack turned fiercely. You shut up. Piggy wilted. Ralph took the conch from him and looked round the circle of boys. We've got to have special people for looking after the fire. Any day there might be a ship out there. He waved his arm at the taut wire of the horizon. And if we have a signal going, they'll come and take us off. And another thing, we ought to have more rules. Where the conch is, that's a meeting. The same up here as down there. They assented. Piggy opened his mouth to speak, caught Jack's eye, and shut it again. Jack held out his hand for the conch and stood up, holding the delicate thing carefully in his sooty hands. I agree with Ralph. We've got to have rules and obey them. After all, we're not savages. We're English, and the English are best at everything. So we got to do the right things. He turned to Ralph. Ralph, I'll split up the choir, my hunters, that is, into groups, and we'll be responsible for keeping the fire going. This generosity brought a splatter of applause from the boys, so that Jack grinned at them, then waved the conch for silence. We'll let the fire burn out now. Who would see smoke at nighttime anyway? And we can start the fire again whenever we like. Altos, you can keep the fire going this week, and Trebles the next. The assembly assented gravely. And we'll be responsible for keeping a lookout, too. If we see a ship out there, they followed the direction of his bony arm with their eyes. We'll put green branches on. Then there'll be more smoke. They gazed intently at the dense blue of the horizon, as if a little silhouette might appear there at any moment. The sun in the west was a drop of burning gold that slid nearer and nearer the sill of the world. All at once, they were aware of the evening as the end of light and warmth. Roger took the conch and looked round them gloomily. I've been watching the sea. There hasn't been the trace of a ship. Perhaps we'll never be rescued. A murmur rose and swept away. Ralph took back the conch. I said before, we'll be rescued sometime. We've just got to wait, that's all. Daring and indignant, Piggy took the conch. That's what I said. I said about our meetings and things, and then you said shut up. His voice lifted into the whine of virtuous recrimination. They stirred and began to shout him down. You said you wanted a small fire, and you been and built a pile like a hay brick. If I say anything, cried Piggy with bitter realism, you say shut up. But if Jack or Maurice or Simon, he paused in the tumult, standing, looking beyond them and down the unfriendly side of the mountain to the great patch where they had found dead wood. Then he laughed so strangely that they were hushed, looking at the flash of his spectacles in astonishment. They followed his gaze to find the sour joke. You got your small fire, all right. Smoke was rising here and there among the creepers. That festooned the dead or dying trees. As they watched, a flash of fire appeared at the root of one wisp, and then the smoke thickened. Small flames stirred at the trunk of a tree and crawled away through leaves and brushwood, dividing and increasing. One patch touched a tree trunk and scrambled up like a bright squirrel. The smoke increased, sifted, rolled outwards. The squirrel leapt on the wings of the wind and clung to another standing tree, eating downwards. Beneath the dark canopy of leaves and smoke, the fire laid hold on the forest and began to gnaw. Acres of black and yellow smoke rolled steadily toward the sea. At the sight of the flames and the irresistible course of the fire, the boys broke into shrill, excited cheering. The flames, as though they were a kind of wildlife, crept as a jaguar creeps on its belly toward a line of birch-like saplings that fledged an outcrop of the pink rock. They flapped at the first sight of the trees, and branches grew a brief foliage of fire. The heart of flame leapt nimbly across the gap between the trees, and then went swinging and flaring along the whole row of them. Beneath the capering boys, a quarter of a mile square of forest was savage with smoke and flame. The separate noises of the fire merged into a drum roll that seemed to shake the mountain. "You got your small fire, all right." Startled, Ralph realized that the boys were falling still and silent, feeling the beginnings of awe at the power that fire set below them. The knowledge and the awe made them savage. "Oh, shut up." "I got the conch," said Piggy in a hurt voice. "I got a right to speak." They looked at him with eyes that lacked interest in what they saw, and cocked ears at the drum roll of the fire. Piggy glanced nervously into hell and cradled the conch. "We gotta let that burn now." "And that was our firewood." He licked his lips. "There ain't nothing we can do. We ought to be more careful. I'm scared." Jack dragged his eyes away from the fire. "You're always scared, you fatty." "I got the conch," said Piggy bleakly. He turned to Ralph. "I got the conch, ain't I, Ralph?" Unwillingly, Ralph turned away from the splendid, awful sight. "What's that?" "The conch. I got a right to speak." The twins giggled together. "We wanted smoke." "Now look!" A pal stretched for miles away from the island. All the boys except Piggy started to giggle. Presently, they were shrieking with laughter. Piggy lost his temper. "I got the conch. Just you listen. The first thing we ought to have made was shelters down there by the beach. It wasn't half cold down there in the night, but the first time Ralph says fire, you goes howling and screaming up there this here mountain, like a pack of kids." By now, they were listening to the tirade. "How can you expect to be rescued if you don't put these things first and act proper?" He took his glasses and made as if to put them down the conch. But the sudden motion toward it of most of the older boys changed his mind. He tucked the shell under his arm and crouched back on a rock. "Then when you get here, you build a bonfire. That isn't no use. Now you've been and set the whole island on fire. Won't we look funny if the whole island burns up? Cooked fruit? That's what we'll have to eat. And roast pork. And there's nothing to laugh at. You said Ralph was chief, and you didn't give him time to think. Then, when he says something, you rush off like... He paused for breath, and the fire growled at them. "And that's not all. Them kids, the little ones, who took any notice of them? Who knows how many we got?" Ralph took a sudden step forward. "I told you to. I told you to get a list of names." "How could I?" cried Piggy indignantly. "All by myself? They waited for 2 minutes, then they fell in the sea. They went into the forest. They just scattered everywhere. How was I to know which was which?" Ralph licked pale lips. "Then you don't know how many of us there ought to be?" "How could I, with them little ones running around like insects? Then when you three came back, as soon as you said make a fire, they all ran away and I never had a chance." "That's enough," said Ralph sharply, and snatched back the conch. "If you didn't, you didn't." "Then you came up here and pinched my specs?" Jack turned on him. "You shut up." "And them little ones was wandering about down there where the fire is? How do you know they aren't still there?" Piggy stood up and pointed to the smoke and flames. A murmur rose among the boys and died away. Something strange was happening to Piggy, for he was gasping for breath. "That little one?" gasped Piggy. "Him with the mark on his face? I don't see him. Where is he now?" The crowd was as silent as death. "Him that talked about the snakes? He was down there." A tree exploded in the fire like a bomb. Tall swaths of creepers rose for a moment into view, agonized, and went down again. The little boys screamed at them. "Snakes! Snakes! Look at the snakes!" In the west, and unheeded, the sun lay only an inch or two above the sea. Their faces were lit redly from beneath. Piggy fell against a rock and clutched it with both hands. "That little one that had a mark on his face? Where is he now? I tell you, I don't see him." The boys looked at each other fearfully, unbelieving. "Where is he now?" Ralph muttered the reply as if in shame. Perhaps he went back to the... Beneath him, on the unfriendly side of the mountain, the drum roll continued.